Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
University of Oregon, former defensive coordinator Nick Aliotti, friend of this show, man of the world, Pac-12 football analyst, grandfather, father, paisan, what else can I call him? He joins us now. How are you, sir?
Excellent, John. How about yourself?
Doing all right. I mean, considering, like, you know, I'm looking around. I got a hard time complaining about anything right now because I'm watching people fight for their lives. What do you make of this coronavirus?
It's absolutely tough on a lot of people right now. Actually, the whole world, really. And I feel bad for those that have lost loved ones, people that have lost their jobs, people that are struggling financially, people that can't go see their loved ones because of the protection of not letting you into the hospitals with the coronavirus. There's a lot of crazy things going on right now. It's a crazy world, and it's tough for everybody, but tougher for those that are sick and those that are losing loved ones, and particularly like in New York and California, Washington, and now I'm here in New Orleans or Louisiana and Michigan. Those seem to be the hot spots right now, but it's tough all over the world.
Have you seen anything like this in your life or even imagined this? I mean, it's like a movie. I keep waiting for Will Smith to have the antidote and then we solve it and we all get, you know, the happiest possible ending that we can get. Although I don't think that that's out there right now.
You know, it's scary because we don't really have, and I won't get political here, but we don't really have a clear message. You know, one day you hear one thing about what you need to be careful of. Next time you hear something different. The one thing that I do know, no, I've never experienced anything like this in my life. And I think a lot of us that are alive today have not experienced anything like this. I know one thing that I will say is that the social distancing has to be real. To me, if everybody acts like they have it and they keep their social distancing, you would have to think, and they're working night and day trying to find a cure and get more ventilators and more masks and all those kinds of things, but you would have to think if we all can be diligent and stay away from one another, which is not easy because our world is not made up like that, you would have to think that in time, I hate to put a time on it, but in time, a month, 2 months, that this has got to get better. And that's the key. We just all have to be diligent in how we're handling this right now.
Nick Aliotti with us, Pac-12 Network analyst, former Oregon defensive coordinator. We had Rick Neuheisel on this week. He talked about his time coaching with you. Man, he talked fondly of you. Was it interesting for you to get to know a guy that you had competed against and work with?
Yeah, it really was. You know, Rick's a good guy. I really enjoyed working with him. And for him with the hot shots of the AAF. We had a great time while at the same time we were putting a pretty good product, a pretty good football team on the field. Rick's a fun guy. He likes to have a good time. He enjoys the game of football. He's way into it. He enjoys people. He likes being in front of the team, in front of the media. He's really good at those kinds of things. I listened to his interview the other day. He does an outstanding job with that. Obviously, that's why he has that job with CBS doing college football. And it was a blast. And I got to know Rick in a different light. You know, a lot of people at the University of Oregon have hated Rick for a long time. Rick Neuheisel has been his moniker, so to speak. But I didn't find Rick to be anything like that. you know, when you're competing against somebody, especially when he was at Washington, that's a big rival for us. So I understand those feelings, but I really enjoyed my time with Rick.
Yeah, he, you know, I think he's a smart guy. Like, I like talking with him. I like talking football. And but I also understand fans. You know, fans are always going to look at the guy coaching the other team and think, oh, that guy's a jerk. Did you have a fan base in the Pac-12 that you thought razzed you or Coach Bilotti or Chip especially hard while you guys were coaching?
No, not really. I think they all hated us when we were winning. You know, that's just that's the nature of the beast. When you're on top, and you know, oftentimes there's going to be those fans that are on you because you're on top, and they want to bring you down. But no, I don't think there was any particular. Obviously, the most obvious one would be Oregon State. When we went to Oregon State and we would walk down the ramp, we would hear all kinds of things. Probably more so there for us than any other venue when we played somebody. So, but not really. I never really felt like anybody was attacking me directly. They were just, you know, rooting their team on and giving you a razzing as you walked down onto the field.
I think that means that's a compliment almost when you are successful and you're good and, you know, sometimes you look up and they boo you a little bit. Okay, well, it's when they don't notice you or they don't care about you that you got to be a little worried.
Absolutely. You know, if you're not relevant, it's easy to like people that aren't, and I don't know if relevant in life, I'm just saying if you're not a relevant team and you're not competing for championships, you know, it's just another game. You're a lot like us. We don't have any hate for you. We need to beat you. But when you're on top, you know, people take notice and they want to beat you. They want to bring you down. So that's just the nature of the beast in athletics. That's just the way it is.
You guys had in the American Alliance of Football, Alliance American Football, you only had about a month to get ready to play a game. Physical condition, was that enough? And was that enough time to put in, you know, your defensive scheme? Did guys get it? Or did you have to dumb it down?
You know, it was interesting. We were working with a lot of young men that had either tryouts with the NFL or even were on teams for a year, on practice squads. So these young men were really into football and had a lot of exposure to different things. And obviously every player has a different IQ, football IQ that is. But I thought they picked it up relatively quick. I was impressed by how fast they did pick it up. What we had to do, to use the word dumb it down, what we had to do is because we only had 53 players on our total team. You're talking about, you know, when you're counting long snappers, punters, and kickers, you only had about 24 or so, 25 on each side of the ball. So your practices had to be much shorter, or else you would wear the guys out. So because the practices were much shorter, John, we had to have fewer things in our defensive arsenal because you couldn't practice them. We were lucky to get 36 total team snaps in a practice as opposed to we would get 80 to 90 snaps when I was at Oregon as a college football team. So you just had to do less so that what you did, they really knew it, and they did it well on Saturday or Sunday.
I always loved watching you call a defensive game because I got the feeling that you weren't just going off of the tendency of the opponent, that sometimes it was just a gut feeling. You'd call a blitz or you saw something and there it wasn't, you know, it was not based on analytics. It was Nick Eliotti going, I'm running a stunt or a blitz here because I think they're going to do this. How accurate is that? Were you going on gut at times?
A lot of times on gut and a lot of times on after numerous hours of film study. You know, you have a game plan, and as a coordinator, you make this big, elaborate board of your game plan on first and 10, third and short, red zone, third and long, critical situations, and you have this in front of you, and you study this all week, and you're looking at film, and you're watching tendencies. But once the game starts, it's amazing how many times the team that you're playing does have their bread and butter plays, and you work to take those away. But once the game starts, you get a feel for what personnel groups they're really going to feature, what they're really trying to do. and therefore you adjust on the fly. And I'm not bragging on this, and I appreciate the compliment. A lot of times after watching the game as it's unfolding and knowing what I've studied, I would be able to not even look at that chart, and 99% of my calls were just made on what I was seeing right then, what the situation called for, what personnel they were in, and a lot of gut feeling is we need to do this to stop them from doing that.
Nick Aliotti with us, former University of Oregon defensive coordinator. How long did that take you? Is that just something where you go, look, I've got 30 years of experience and I, why, you know, I've got to put that to work? And how long did it take you to get that feel? Or is it a matter of you had some games maybe early in your career where you guessed wrong? And I don't even want to call it a guess, because it's more of a educated hunch, right?
Absolutely. I think that as you get more experienced, you know, a lot of people want to become from a position coach to be a coordinator, to be a head coach, and that's great aspirations. But unless you truly, and I'm not bragging, I was a football junkie. I studied this game inside and out. I would spend, and it doesn't matter the hours, and it's not a bragging point, it's just a fact. I would spend 6 to 8 hours a day just watching film over and over in situations and what other people were doing and how they did it and what worked and what didn't work and what could my guys digest. There's so many spokes to this whole thing that really with experience and with time, I had seen almost anything that an offense can throw at me that I was able to know, well, this is what I need to do when they're doing that. And, you know, it doesn't always work. Sometimes schematically you can have the right answer, but if Johnny can't tackle Joe, then it doesn't matter. It just doesn't work, you know? Like, I used to laugh. I remember somebody telling me, Coach, don't you guys work on tackling? Yeah, we're on defense. Obviously, we work on tackling. But if you put Nick Aliotti in the open field, as good a tackler as I might have been at one time against DeAnthony Thomas, I'm going to lose that battle most of the time. It's just a matchup sometimes and an ability thing.
Best tackler you ever coached?
Chad Cota. Chad Cota can get people down, and a name, and another guy that comes to mind right away, Jeff Sherman. Jeff Sherman was a great open field tackler. And I remember when I took over the DBs for Danny Shuler, when I first became the coordinator at Oregon, and took the DBs as my position, you know, they used to always start off with all these fancy footwork drills and backpedaling, turn and run, open, plant and drive and all that. And the first thing we did when I became the new coach and Sherman had Shuler as his coach in Cota, we tackled for 15 minutes every day. And they used to look at me like, what are we doing? We're DBs. Well, I think they figured it out, because we played a tremendous amount of man coverage with that team in 94 that was fortunate enough to go to the Rose Bowl, and they became outstanding tacklers, and in particular, open field tacklers, because we played a lot of man, and you were out there on an island, you had to get it done if they caught the ball. So they understood as the season progressed.
Recruiting becomes so important. Yesterday on the show, I talked to Jonathan Smith. He wants to play with one back and two tight ends. It's what everybody wants to do now. And he talked about, George Kittle being kind of a unicorn. It's tough to find those guys. When you're on defense, what's that position that is tough to find? Who's the unicorn on defense?
It's always tough to find. First of all, position-wise, D-line. Big, strong D-linemen. You know, it's hard to get enough of those, because on the West Coast, we just don't have as many as they do in the South. We just don't. It's a fact. But the guy that's hard to find is that edge pass rusher. Like the Thibodeau.
Yeah.
Like the Ducks have. Those guys are hard to find, because you might think you could teach a guy to do that, and you can to a certain degree, because you could teach anything in time. But those great edge pass rushers, they just have a knack of beating one-on-one blocks and have a knack of of edging and getting around and turning their body around the corner and making those plays on the quarterback. That's the hardest guy to find, in my opinion, because those guys are mostly naturals as opposed to guys that you can develop.
Interesting, too, because I'm looking at Eric Armstead, who's made a nice professional career of himself on the defensive side of the ball. Armstead wanted, like, there were a lot of coaches wanted him to be an offensive player. You guys were, I think, the only program that offered him a shot to come in and play defense.
And I'm glad we did. He was a tremendous football player for us. Eric, I always thought, was a good football player. And I remember when he first got drafted by the Niners, how everybody was down on him for a couple years. And I said, give the guy time. You know, he's just a rookie or a second-year guy. Give him time. This guy's a solid young man that wants to do it right, that'll work at his trade. And my goodness, I think he signed for $19 or $20 million this season. And Buckner got a nice payday himself with the Indianapolis Colts. So those two guys are doing quite well.
Those guys buy when you take them out to dinner, right? I mean, they're paying.
Oh, I hope so. My goodness, yes. Yes, they're buying. They're absolutely buying.
Nick Aliotta, you're the best. I appreciate you. Thanks for bringing some joy into the world. You always do. You're always so upbeat. I appreciate you, man.
John, I appreciate you. Everybody stay safe out there, and this too will pass. We will be stronger and better for it. Just hang in there. Have a great day.
Nick Aliotta, there he is, Pac-12 Network analyst, always upbeat. I get a text from him maybe once a week, and he just, like, in the last couple of weeks, it's been particularly upbeat, optimism, how are you doing, you know, telling, basically, you know, pointing out that this show serves a purpose in the community, and he's a super encouraging individual. I love having people like that around this show and bringing them to you. Up next, our big splash, Kelly Graves, still ahead. Later in the program, we talk Pac-12 with Julian Minnison of KEZI. We'll talk a little bit about Oregon State. Jonathan Smith was on yesterday's show. My wife will pop into studio later, and we'll share some things that we want you to get involved with in helping the community. All right. Leave it here. You got the BFT. Coming up, Kelly Graves, the University of Oregon women's basketball coach. She'll be joining us. That, of course, leads us to the big splash. It's the one thing in sports you need to know today.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where?
Down there.
Must be the big splash. Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips haircuts app and check in.
Well, amid some ongoing concern and the escalation of COVID-19 infection rates in our country, Clemson coach Dabo Swinney is either the most optimistic man on the planet or maybe just trying to stay focused on the prize. He said he remains optimistic that the college football season will be starting on time. He said, that's what's going to happen. I don't have any doubt. I have zero doubt that we're going to be playing and that the stands are going to be packed. End quote. I think he might be focused on keeping it positive. So I'm not going to bash him for that. I think right now keeping it positive is a good thing. But I also think, like, the zero doubt part of that raises reasonable doubt in my mind that he believes that. There's no way that he has zero doubt about this. I also think the packed stadium part is interesting. And, I'm trying not to take this as Dabo Swinney not taking coronavirus seriously, because I don't think that's fair to him to say that. But I also feel like, dude, this is sports. Packed stadiums, college football, not as important as maybe, flattening the infection rate, or not as important as the shortage of N95 masks that people on the front lines are facing. So, yes, Dabo Swinney, he's got the mindset. He's got a plan. He's getting the Tigers ready to play in late August and early September. But While I appreciate he's not going to doomsday scenarios like some other people, I also think that he is towing the line with trying to make college football sound like it's more important than anything else that's going on in the world. And that's the one thing you need to know. This is America. Dabo said, "We've stormed the beaches of Normandy. We've sent a rover on Mars and walked on the moon. This is the greatest country. We created an iPhone, and I can sit here and talk to people in all those different places. We got the smartest people in the world. We're going to rise up and kick this thing in the teeth and get back to our lives." End quote. I like the optimism. I also don't think that we've been successful without failure. And I think it's important to remember that we're in a fight here together. Dabo Swinney, keeping it optimistic. Kelly Graves is coming up. University of...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.